Okay, good afternoon, everyone. First, I want to thank Yuan Wan for the invitation. It's my pleasure to visit Perimeter Institute. Yeah, I enjoy my talking with theorists here. I feel it's always true that it's faster to learn by talking. It's faster to learn theory by talking to theorists than reading a book. So yeah, so today I would like to talk about our experimental work on low energy electron dynamics of 3D topological insulated thin films. So yeah, so all the work were done when I was a student at Johns Hopkins University. So first, I would like to acknowledge my collaborators for these projects. So yeah, so when I was a student at Hopkins, I was working in the Armitage group. So Peter involved all the projects I will talk about in a moment. And our samples are mainly from Professor Xiangxiu O's group from Rutgers University, so they are MBE films. And we have some theory input from Wang Kongxie, who is at University of Alabama now. Okay, so a quick question is why we do tera spectroscopy? Because, so the energy of 1 terahertz is like on order milliEV, so it's 1 terahertz is like 4 milliEV. So we want to study the low energy dynamics of like metal or like in magnetic system. We want to study the low energy excitations because we think that the low energy modes in metals or in some excitations in magnets are the kind of fundamental thing. Also from the theory perspective, so these effects can be well described by the long wavelength effective field theory. So our hope is that by a combination with low energy electron dynamics in experiment and the theory, then maybe physics can be described better. So yeah, so basically my talk will be focused on 3D topological insulators. The material I will talk about is bismuth sunlight. So I will divide my talk into 3 parts. In the first part, I will talk about how we use tera spectroscopy to study the low energy signature of these surface state in 3D topological insulator. And I will also talk about how we kill this surface state by a topological insulator to a conventional insulator quantum phase transition in this system. So basically, what's the signature in the low energy dynamics related with this quantum phase transition? The second part I will talk about in the semi-classical limit, we study like a sectional resonance and the lambda level transition. And then we found like at high field, there is anomalous broadening behavior of the sectional resonance width, which is coming from the electron phonon coupling. So in my last part, I will talk about beyond the band theory, so some field theory description of topological insulator. So we use our tera spectroscopy to study the axion electron dynamics of the surface state. And then in experiments, we observed the quantized phi rotation and curl rotation in the units of Fermi constant, which might provide evidence for the topological magnetoelectric effect. Yeah, so terahertz is like a 4 milliEV. It's the right energy, or it's a low energy to study this physics, as you will see in a moment. Okay, so very brief introduction about topological insulator. I guess you're all very familiar. So the last decade witnessed an explosion in the topological states of matter. So like as highlighted by Nature Physics in an article last year, so this was regarded as one of the top physics discovery in the past decade. So it's also quite popular. If you watch Big Bang Theory, then you will find that on the whiteboard, so here is a sandwich structure for the mercury terahertz topological insulator, and here there is a theta turn, that's the axion field turn. So what are topological insulators? So these are exotic states of matter not characterized by the broken symmetry. So phenomenologically, it's a bulk insulator. So it's like a piece of silicon, but it's wrapped around by a helical metal. So by helical, I mean spin up and spin down, moving to the opposite direction. So then in short, the topological insulators are bulk insulators, but wrapped around with helical metal. So this demo I made is not realistic because you can never peel a surface state and to see the bulk. In other words, if you break the topological insulator two pieces, the new surface will become conducting. So then how does topological insulator, 3D topological insulator related with quantum Hall effect? So we know in quantum Hall effect, like in a very clean two-dimensional electronic gas, if you apply magnetic field, and you will have chiral edge state, and these edge state are responsible for the quantized resistance. So then just think, just imagine that you have one copy like this of the quantum Hall effect, and another copy with magnetic field going downwards, then you stack them together, then you will have a quantum spin hall insulator, also called a 2DTI. So here, the role of the magnetic field is played by the spin orbit coupling. So this gradient V cross P is like momentum dependent magnetic field. So here, spin up and spin down move into the opposite direction. So then from 2D and to 3D, so these edge state becoming surface state. Okay, so these states are not characterized by spontaneous symmetry breaking. Then how do the community classify topological insulators? So before going in that, I want to talk about conventional insulator, for example, like n-doped gallium arsenide. So we can also view vacuum as a band insulator. So we know the wave function has to be continuous across a boundary. So then basically we can connect vacuum to conventional insulator like this way, and so theorists call it's adiabatic connected. So that means you can perturb the Hamiltonian, but not with closing the gap. But this is not the case for topological insulator. So usually for the Z2 topological insulator, they have very strong spin orbit coupling. So inside of topological insulator, there is a band inversion. So the band are inverted. In other words, the mass turn is negative inside of the topological insulator. So then in order to make a smooth connection for the wave function, these band has to cross at the boundary. And at the boundary, also then as a result, the Dirac massless surface state exists. So in short, the existence of the Dirac surface state is determined by the topology in the bulk wave function. And this is called bulk boundary correspondence. So then topological insulator are adiabatic disconnected from vacuum. So basically you can understand like this. So there is a mass domain across the boundary and the surface state are trapped as a bound state. So the symmetry in the 3D topological insulator I want to talk about is a time reversal symmetry, and the corresponding topological invariant is Z2 invariant. So this is a good analogy, good in our life, daily life. So this is a proposed flip bridge between Hong Kong and mainland China. So these two regions have orthic traffic rules. It's like a different mass, different size of the masses. So then, and the traffic is kind of like wave function. So in order to maintain a smooth traffic, then you need to have a cross at this point. And this is like the band crossing in the topological insulator case. So then in order to remove this crossing is that you need to change the traffic rule in one of the region. And it's the same thing here. If you want to remove this band crossing, you need to invert these bands back. So that's the idea for the topological phase transition I will talk about in a few minutes. So in real space, spin up and spin down move into the opposite direction. So in the momentum space, it's Dirac-Kohn. So what's special about the Dirac-Kohn is that, so on one, let's say on the top surface state, you have a left-handed Dirac-Kohn, and on the bottom surface state, you have a right-handed Dirac-Kohn. So this is, I think, one of the reasons why topological insulator become very interesting in the beginning is that, so we know that for fermion doubling theory, that Dirac points must come in pairs in time reversal symmetric system. And a 3D topological insulator nicely invades the theory by putting another Dirac-Kohn on the opposite side of a surface state. Okay, so yeah, about the spin structure for the surface state. So on the surface state, spin is locked to momentum, and this is so-called topological protection transport. So we know that transport is mainly sensitive to backscattering, momentum relaxation scattering. So like, for example, if we estimate the quasi-particle scattering rate, if we estimate from the quasi-particle scattering rate to the transport scattering rate, if we use the Fermi-Golden rule, then we have this weight, like 1 minus cosine of theta. So then on topological insulator, because you have this spin momentum locking, so this 180-degree backscattering is forbidden. So then you have another factor, 1 plus cosine theta term, to suppress the backscattering. So then people usually say, oh, there is no backscattering, but it doesn't mean there is no dissipation, because, for example, like 90-degree scattering is allowed. So also, when this topological protection is gone, when you break this topological protection by some, for example, by some hybridization, then you will find that the scattering rate in transport will be enhanced by a factor of 4. So this is the simplest estimation by Fermi-Golden rule. Of course, reality is more complicated because the spin structure can be more complicated. But the message I want to convey here is that when this topological protection is gone, the transport scattering rate will be enhanced by a factor of unity. And that's, you will see in a moment, this is one of the signature for the topological phase transition. Yeah.
So you're assuming kind of, just like delta function scatterer is factor of 4? You're assuming that kind of microscopic amplitude for scattering is angle of the delta?
No, I think, you mean for the quasar particle scattering rate, or?
Yeah.
So I think, here we think it's we assume it's isotropic.
Yeah, making that assumption.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a very rough estimation. Okay, so what are the signatures for the surface state transport in topological insulator? So the material I want to talk about is bismuth sunlight. So it's not, so the details may not be very important. Okay. So this is some experimental details. I just wanna emphasize a few points which is important in the rest of my talk. So the sample I work on is films. So it's grown by molybdenum being epitaxy. So what that it do is basically it deposits layers, atoms. So the thickness unit is so-called quintuple layer. So it's consists of 5 layers of atom, and this is like 1 nanometer. So I will use this quintuple layer a lot, but that just means the thickness is changing for the sample. Okay, and so this is the experimental data for the bismuth sunlight. So the gap, so what's the important energy scale here is that, so the gap, the ball gap is like 220 milliEV. So the ball gap is like 220 milliEV. So that's the important scale here. And a terahertz is like 4 milliEV. So basically we are probing the intraband excitation near the Fermi surface. So yeah. Also, a few words about our technique. So it's we call it time domain terahertz spectroscopy. So essentially, what the quantity we measure is the electric field passing through a sample. So we measure the electric field. So in a time domain, then by going to the frequency domain, we have both amplitude and the phase information. So basically, in other words, we will measure the complex transmission. So we have amplitude and phase information. And by using some calculation, then we can get out the complex conductance, so both real and imaginary conductance, without using Kramer's chronic transformation. So the elegance of this technique is that we measure the complex conductance directly, not using like extrapolation, then do Kramer's chronic transformation. So just give you a feeling about the energy scale of 1 terahertz is, so 1 terahertz is like 4 milliEV, it's like 50 Kelvin. Basically, our ability is measured from like 0.4 milliEV to 10 milliEV and down to like 1.5 Kelvin. So yeah, so this is the data on the topological insulator bismuth sunlight. So here I'm plotting conductance. So it's conductivity and thickness. So the red part is the real part. The blue curve is the imagined part. So you can see there are two main features here. One is this it's peak. So this is a phonon. This is phonon peak. So that's just some lattice vibration. So then another feature is this low frequency like slope, and we call it a Joule response. So yeah, the spectra can be well described by the Joule-Lorentz formula. So this is Joule term. This is a Lorentzian Joule-Lorentz term, which model the phonon, and there is a lattice polarization term. Okay, so by fitting, so the dotted curve of the fit here, you can see the fitting quality is pretty well. So by fitting, we can separate the contribution from the phonon and from the Joule part, because Joule part is the response we want to study, because this might relate with topological surface state. So this is just plotting the phonon part. But let's talk about the JUDE part. So this is the JUDE response, the real part and imagined part. So yeah, there are two quantities I want to explain here. So in the JUDE part, so there are two quantities. One is the plasma frequency square, we call it spectral rate. Another is the scattering rate gamma. So for the how we define the scattering rate is as following. So JUDE response peak at zero frequency, at zero field. So then when the real part of the conductance fall into the half value of the peak, so it's a half maximum width, and we call it the scattering rate. And this is related with the transport lifetime tau. Yeah, so scattering rate is characterized by the transport lifetime. So another quantity I want to talk about is the spectral rate. So spectral rate is proportional to the area below the real part of the conductance. So it's an integrated area of the conductance, and it's proportional to plasma frequency squared. So this is in optics we call it sum rule. So this is proportional to the carrier density over the effective mass. Okay, so yeah, how we detect the surface state transport is so this is how we do it. So as I told you, the quintuple layer is basically like a one block of five layer atoms. So we vary the thickness of this sample, then we find that. So first thing we saw this phonon peak has strong thickness dependence, but this low frequency JUDE response is thickness independent. So this indicates this is some kind of two-dimensional channel. So, but when you see when the thickness become very thin, you want to see that in the DC limit the conductance is dropped. For example, this purple curve and this red curve. So the DC conductance is dropped by almost by a factor of two, but the width is also increased by almost the same factor. In other words, the area below the JUDE response is kind of conserved. So in order to capture this thickness dependence, we perform the JUDE Lorentz fit in the previous slide. So then we can get the spectral rate for the JUDE term. So we don't integrate the spectral rate, but we capture the spectral rate by fitting. Yeah. So then you will find if you plot the spectral rate for the JUDE response at the function thickness, you will find this is independent of thickness. In contrast, the phonon spectral rate increase as a function of thickness. That's because phonon is a bulk origin, and these JUDE response is two-dimensional. Yeah.
So I have two questions. So this is measured in reflection domain.
No, it's in transmission. Yeah.
Oh, so then do you know, does the signal come from both surfaces?
Yeah, yes. So this is, we are measuring both surface state. So yeah. So the one thing I forgot to say that for terrors, its wavelength is like 300 micron, and film is like 50 nanometer. So the film thickness is much smaller than the wavelength. And also we measure transmission, so we are sensitive to both surface state.
And the phonon is acoustic?
No, it's optics. It's optics active phonon. Yeah, because this is inversion symmetric, so this is an optical active phonon. So optics measure the excitation at Q equal to zero. So usually acoustic phonon don't have mode at Another interesting is that for the scattering rate, so you will see at very thick is kind of constant, but when it become very thin, it increase exponentially, because when it's very thin, so the top surface state might tunnel into the bottom one. So it's basically a tunneling process, which I will use for some finite size scaling in the phase transition part. Then I want to talk about topological phase transition in indium doped bismuth sunlight. So how can we kill this surface state? So I think the only way is that you close the bulk gap, then invert these bands back. So like in topological insulator, such as bismuth sunlight, this band inversion is due to the strong spin orbital coupling. So then the idea is if we can reduce the spin orbital coupling but maintain the structure, so what we do is we substitute indium. We substitute bismuth by indium. So indium is much, much lighter than bismuth, so the spin orbital coupling is reduced. So in the end of this compound, the indium selenide is a normal band insulator, and it has the same structure. So basically, the picture is that you reduce the spin-orbit coupling, then the bulk gap will decrease. At some point, they will close. Then the bulk state will reopen the gap, but with the opposite in terms of the parity. Because this system is an inversion symmetric system, so the parity is a good quantum number. So basically, these yellow and blue lines, or the colors, means that the band is inverted and reopened, or the parity is inverted. And this is the idea of the topological phase transition. And in the topological trivial case, there is no direct surface state. Then there may be some trivial even pair of like a Rauschbach state, but there's no topological state in the non-topological phase. Okay, so how do we detect these measurements? So the first thing we did is some high energy probe, because the gap is very big. The gap is 350 milliev. So the Terra's data I showed you is like below 10 milliev. So it's like the previous data I showed you is like here, but now we are measuring at the mid infrared, it's like 300 milliev. So this is a conductivity. So this very sharp rising conductivity, we call it absorption edge, is corresponding to the bulk gap. So what we do is that we measure this. And we found that with increasing the doping, so this absorption edge shift to low energy first, then shift back. That means the gap is closing, then reopening. So to capture the trend, we just take a cut at 310 milliev. Then we plot the absorption coefficient. So this is the definition of the absorption coefficient. We plot it as a function of doping. So you can find that for different thickness, for all of the thickness we measured, there is always the peak at 6%, the 6% of the indium concentration. So we associate this absorption peak as a signature for the bulk gap closure. So why is that? So when the gap is bulk gap decreasing, the joint density of a state at the chemical potential is increasing. So then when the gap is closes, the joint density of state will reach a maximum, so the absorption is maximum. After that, the gap is reopening, so the absorption is decreasing. So this is some bulk signature. So we know that from bulk boundary correspondence, when the bulk has some change in terms of topology, the surface state will also change. So then I also showed you that in the beginning that the signature of the surface state is in the milliev regime. So I will show you how that these low energy modes change when the bulk is changing. So this is the plot of same thickness, like a 64 nanometer indium bismuth sunite, but with different doping. So, and the red curve is the pure bismuth sunite I showed you a few slides ago, so it's the same curve. So then when we increase the indium concentration, you will see that first thing you will see is the phonon peak shift to higher frequency, higher energy. That's because indium is much lighter. The phonon is just shift to higher frequency. But we are more interested in the low frequency Joule part. So the Joule part, for example, from this red to orange, yellow to green curve, that's from 0% to 4%. You can see that the Joule peak is become broadens, because indium is a new scatter. It's a new scattering center. But this kind of change is kind of smooth. So then at 5%, which is the black curve here, you will find that so it kind of suddenly flattens. So it indicates there's some abrupt change. And also from 5% to 6%, you can see the area or the spectroid is reduced a lot. That means some state are a kind of missing here. So in order to see this trend more clearly, so we plot the scattering rate, basically the half maximum full width as a function of doping. So we will see that so this is scattering rate versus indium concentration. This is just one thickness. So we'll find that the scattering rate kind of increases smoothly, almost kind of saturation, like a saturation behavior, but at some doping, like 5% level, so the scattering rate has a jump. So we call it a jump, but this is not a real phase transition. This is just because in the pure case, we know that the surface state penetration depth is inverse proportional to the gap size. So like in the real material, like in bismuth sunite, this is only like a 2 nanometer. So in a 64 nanometer, the top surface state and the bottom surface state are not really talking to each other in the pure case. But when you increase the doping, increase the substitution, so the gap is reducing. That means the penetration depth is increasing. So at some critical doping, the top and bottom surface state will talk to each other. So then, so the surface state basically hybridize. So in other words, when top and bottom surface are talking to each other, the phase space for scattering is expanded. So originally, because of the suppression of the backscattering, this electron cannot be backscattered here. But when surface state, when top surface state is talking to the bottom one, so this can be scattered to the minus k point on the bottom surface state. That's why we have a jump here. So, but this jump is not a real phase transition. This is it's kind of a crossover behavior. So you will see that in the next slide that this jump, well, this crossover behavior has thickness dependence. So yeah. So then basically we measure different thickness of this Indian theories. You will find like for a very thick sample, like a 128 nanometer sample. So this this jump in the scattering rate or the crossover happened at 6%, which agree with the bulk gap closure we determined by the mid-infrared measurement. But for very thin sample, this jump in the scattering can happen at lower doping. That's because in a very in a thinner sample, surface state can hybridize even before the bulk real bulk gap closing point. So this is a very interesting finite size effect. As we know that in continuous phase transition, usually like when the sample becomes smaller and smaller, this discontinuity will be smeared out. But here, so this is a true phase transition point, 6% of the doping. But for thinner sample, there is still a discontinuous kind of jump. But this is a crossover, not a phase transition at very low doping. Yeah.
But why there are no data points beyond 0.03? Right? I mean, from the plot, I can't really see whether it's a jump or it's just a continuous.
Yeah, so yeah, I didn't plot here, but if you measure it, you just kind of flat here. Yeah, for the green curve. Yeah. So then, yeah. Yeah, so for the so this is a plot we show a scattering rate versus thickness. So this is a pure bismuth sonnet. So there's no doping. Basically, pure bismuth sonnet with different thickness. So we did it's an exponential fit, which basically captures the tunneling process from top to bottom surface. So we can do the same thing for different doping. For example, this is a 3% of the doping, and we can also extract the penetration depths for 3% doping. So then, yeah. So then we can do the same thing for the other doping. So this is a real finite size effect scaling because we are changing the sample thickness. So then, yeah. By this analysis, we can also we plot inverse penetration depths as a function of doping. So yeah. So we can see that when we increase the doping at 6%, this inverse penetration depths go to zero, which means the penetration depths diverge at 6%. So this is a signature of a phase transition from topological insulator to normal band insulator. So and also note that there is no order parameter. So this evanescent length of the surface state appears as a row of the correlation length in this phase transition. So this is a little similar to the percolation picture between transition between different lambda levels in the quantum host. Yeah.
Can I go back a bit to this one?
Yeah.
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 It looks like even when the concentration is very large, you still have some low frequency.
Yeah.
So do you know?
Yes. Yes. So yes. So as I showed you here, so then, like above the phase transition point, so there's no direct surface state, but there is some trivial Rauschbach state.
I see. So
yeah.
They're present on both sides.
Yeah. 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 Because so inversion is kind of locally breaking on the surface, and then trivial Rauschbach state after that. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So we have some new data. So this is the chemical potential is not very close to the Dirac point. So we have some new data when the chemical potential is like very close. So the bulk gap is at 200 milliev. When the chemical potential is like 30 milliev. about the Dirac point, and we redid this experiment. So at 6%, it's completely insulating, so there's no Lorentz modes when we lower the chemical very close to the Dirac point. But this is quite high, even though it's in the gap, but it's high, yeah. Okay, so, yes, okay, yeah. So one thing we realized after the experiment is that, so there's interesting property of the evanescent decay length. Actually, it's energy independent because, yeah, so this is just an experimental story. So basically, like APAS is really measure the depth at the k equal to 0 point, but we are at like somewhere here. So we are measured at some finite momentum. So naive thinking that, so we would expect, because we are at measuring at high energy, so then we will see that much longer evanescent decay length than APAS, but internally we see almost the same thing. Then it turned out when you go to finite k, so the energy is becoming, this is becoming smaller, but the mass is increasing at finite k. So for the Dirac fermion, so basically the mass is h bar kf over vf. So when you're at finite k, the mass is increasing. So these two factors cancel each other. That means the evanescent wavelength is energy independent. So if you vary the energy, so the penetration depth is also doesn't change as long as you're below the as long as you have some high symmetry point in the momentum space. So yeah, actually this is supported by ab initio calculation. For example, this is the surface state. So this is at the Dirac point. So that's the red curve. So this is the blue curve. So this is at very big k. Then you assign the surface dependent depth doesn't really change unless you go to the continuum that is kind of extending in the bulk state. Okay, so yeah. So then by measuring many samples, so we construct a phase diagram for this system. So the in this red region we named it 3D topological insulator. This yellow region we named it. So this is non-topological insulator in the 3D limit. So this is the interesting region, and we call it hybridized topological insulator, by which we mean the bulk is still in the inverted region, but surface state already talking to each other in a finite size system. So yeah. So then this boundary is a crossover between these two. Yeah, it's a crossover behavior. It's not a true phase transition, and the true phase transition is at this point. So when the thickness is very large, or in the thermodynamic limit, then this is a true phase transition point, and there is some interesting like a 3D Dirac point in the bulk existing at this quantum critical point. And also when the film become very, very thin, so it will become non-TI in the 2D limit. This is another crossover behavior. So then I will move to the second part.
So did you say that there is actually phase transition between, say, for example, 3D topological insulator and hybridized topological insulator? Like is there actual phase transition or changes in the smooth state?
So between a 3D topological insulator and 3D...
No, for example, between 3D topological insulator and hybridized topological insulator.
So you mean this is boundary?
Yeah.
This is not a true phase transition. This is just a... So between here to here, what happened is the bulk is still inverted. So the bulk is still in the inverted region. But surface state can hybridize. Yeah.
But this happens smoothly.
Yeah. So this is not a phase transition. The true phase transition is somewhere here. So between a 3D topological insulator to a 3D a 3D normal band insulator when the sample is very thick or in the thermodynamic limit.
And also about non-topological insulator 2D, does it also happen smoothly? For example, phase transition between hybridized topological insulator and non-topological insulator 2D, the picture.
I think this is not a, so I think you mean across this, I think this is still kind of a crossover,
mm-hmm.
But for this, I'm not sure, but yeah, I guess there's also a crossover. Okay, so yeah, so in the second part, I will talk about in the semi-classical limit. So the chemical potential is still in the ball, but still not low enough to observe some exotic physics such as topological magnetoelectric effect or the half integer quantum Hall effect. So yeah, so I will talk about in a semi-classical limit, we observe section resonance and electron-phonon coupling in this compound. So basically, so what we need to do in experiment to observe some exotic effect is that we need to lower the chemical potential. So how does it reflect in the Taylor spectra is so when we lower the chemical potential, we will see the Joule spectral weight is lower. So for example, this red curve has much lower spectral weight, has much lower area than the blue curve. That means the chemical potential is reducing. So yeah, basically this is just really with, so basically the carrier density is reducing, so the spectral age is reducing. So actually there is an interesting aspect about the sound rule for Dirac fermion. So this is a general sound rule. So the plasma frequency is proportional to the carrier density over the mass. So usually like for quadratic fermion, so when you tune the carrier density, the mass is more or less unchanged. But Dirac fermion is different. For Dirac fermion, the carrier density is proportional to Kf squared. So the mass is also related with Kf. It's h bar Kf over Vf. So in the end, if you use some upper dispersion, or if you use the surface dispersion, so basically the carrier density and the mass are related, not like quadratic fermion. Not like quadratic. Quadratic bands, they are not related. So Dirac fermion, they are related. In the end, you can have a relation between the plasma frequency and the Fermi wave vector. So then when you tune the chemical potential, you will find that the spectral weight is consistent with the Dirac fermion. So I want to skip these experiment details, but this is an interesting thing about the sound rule for Dirac fermion. So yeah, this is also experimental slides. So this is basically how we measure sectional resonance measurement. So what we do is we measure the complex far rotation. So basically, when we apply a magnetic field, which is perpendicular to the surface state, the surface will be gapped, and the polarization of the light will have a rotation, and this is far rotation, and that's related with the real part. And also, the linear polarized light will become elliptically polarized, and this ellipticity is related with the imaginary part of the far rotation. So yeah, so I think people might wonder why rotation is a complex number. So the real part is the real rotation, but the imaginary part is related with the ellipticity. So yeah. So basically, the resolution of the experiment is like half milliradians, and also the technique we use is called fast rotating polarization modulation technique. So this is rotating like 10,000 RPM, but that's not important. So yeah, so how we describe the experiment is we use the Jones matrix formula then. So this is like the incident electric field, and this is the electric field coming after interacting with the sample. So this is the transmission matrix. So basically we use the symmetry of the Bismuth-Sonnet to constrain these matrix elements. So we know that when we apply magnetic field, the eigenstate is it's in a circular base. So basically, we diagonalize the transmission matrix in the circular base, and we have a response for the right and the left-hand circular polarized light. Then we can model the fire rotation and the curl rotation in a circular base. So this is the data. So yeah, so this is a real conductance. I describe that in the zero field limit, the Joule response is peaked at zero frequency. So when you increase the field, the spectral weight below, or the area below the Joule response is conserved, but it will develop a peak at a finite frequency. So basically it just shifts to higher frequency, but the area is conserved. But this is not very accurate. So then more accurate trend can be seen in the far rotation. So this is the real part, this is the imaginary part, or the ellipticity. So in the real part, you will see, so when we increase the field, so there is an inflection point, like here, inflection point. So this inflection point is the sectional frequency in the experiment. You will see that this inflection point shifts to higher frequency. So this is a signature for the for the section resonance is in inflection point shift to higher frequency. So this is still in the semi-classical regime. So in the imaginary part of the ellipticity, so the minimum is the minimum position is the section frequency. So this is shift to higher frequency. So the chemical potential is pretty high. It's still very high. So then we're in the semi-classical limit. We're still in the section resonance limit. So then you can find that omega c is proportional to t linearly, not quadratic, because the filling factor is very high. So there's an overlap between different lambda levels. Yeah. One interesting thing we found is that so this half maximum full width or the scattering rate has a field dependence. So here I'm plotting scattering rate versus section frequency, because this is basically proportional to field. So basically, when we increase the field, we find there is the increasing of the scattering rate. So, but in the Joule formula, then as in a simple Joule picture, the scattering rate won't have field dependence. So this is something unexpected. So then we took two theories, because we think that so originally like the spin, the surface of spin is like kind of point in plane when you apply, but there's no backscattering. So then when you apply magnetic field, they were kind of lined up along the field. So there were some have overlap. So then you would expect that backscattering can happen, but actually this Zeeman effect cannot explain this change. So this Zeeman effect is very small on the scattering rate, and also at high field, so you will have lambda levels, and also we also calculate that orbital effect cannot explain the field dependence. So there is something new. Oh, sorry. Yeah.
That's okay. Is it thickness dependent at all?
You mean this guy?
Yeah, I mean, are you sure that the surface states are not
that in? Yeah, they don't hybridize.
They're not hybridized.
Yeah, so this is, so the thickness is like 10 or 50, it's like 50 times thicker than the penetration depth of the surface. So they don't hybridize, yes. So then that means there's something else. So if you look at the Joule conductance, you will see this is not single Lorentzian peak. That means there is some mode. That means there's some mode the electron is interacting with. So then the tool we use is so-called extended Joule model. So basically in the Joule model, you assume the frequency independent scattering rate. So then now we are consider frequency dependent scattering rate. So what we do is we can use this extended Joule formula to invert the conductance to get the frequency dependent scattering rate, and it's some frequency dependent kind of coupled constant or the mass term. So this is like this is a little similar to the imaginary part of the self energy, and the mass term or the interaction is kind of related with the real part. So then we define a fully renormalized scattering rate, which is this divided by the interaction by the mass. So then we plot the fully renormalized scattering rate on a simpler. You will kind of see, so they have a similar kind of maximum at this energy. So it's like 0.5, 0.7 terahertz, like 3 or 4 milliev. So this is much sharper, because in the Joule fit, we assume the frequency independent. So this is kind of average. It's a kind of frequency average. So this is kind of a broadened trend, but they all have the same maximum at like 3 milliev. Also, by this procedure, we can extract the electron. The coupling constant is like 0.5. So yeah, actually, so I didn't put the, like what modes are coupled here. So if you're interested, I can talk about. Actually, so this is coupled to some phonon mode, which show a co-anomaly on surface. So if you're interested, I can discuss. But I want to talk about something more interesting. I mean, in my perspective. So the first two thing I talk about is basically based on the band theory. So that's mainly developed by Professor Kim at UPenn. So there is another classification for the topological insulator, which is developed by Su-Chen Zhang from Stanford. So they use topological field theory to classify the like 3D TI versus 3D normal band insulator. So from my perspective, we want to use optics to study the accident electron dynamics of the surface data, which manifest as a quantized phi rotation and curl rotation in the units of the fine structure constant in experiments. So just very, very, very short about history of accident electron dynamics. So it was first proposed by Frank Wilczek in 1987. He was trying to explain some CP violation in particle physics. So then the basic idea is that you introduce additional action term. So this is a theta term, and it had the E dot B term. So this he called it, this is axiom field operator. So the consequence of this additional action is that so the Maxwell equation will be modified. There will be extra charge density and extra carrier density related with this theta term. Yeah. So then I think I think an axion was kind of a hypothetical particle and which was never observed in experiments. So in 2008, there was a seminal work by Qi Hughes Zhang from Stanford. They use this concept in the context of 3D topological insulator. So basically, the idea is that so provided that the time reversal symmetry is respected, all the 3D insulator can be classified by the quantized value of this axiom field or by theta term in the bulk. So if theta has a modulus pi, then it's topological insulator. If theta has modulus zero, it's non-TI. So then, yeah. So then, these extra carrier density and extra current density will show up in the place where this theta vary in space. So that's the topological insulator to non-topological insulator boundary. So that is two very important effects. One is if you gap out the surface state, either by, for example, you can deposit a ferromagnetic layer on the surface state to gap out the surface state, then if you apply a current this way, then you have a half integer quantum Hall effect. Another thing is that if you apply a magnetic field, so the charges will be trapped. Actually, each flux trap n plus 1/2 electrons. And so this is related with the topological magnetoelectric effect. Okay, so yeah, basically we in experiment we just try our best to lower the chemical potential to the Dirac point. So then we observe the dissipationless quantum Hall effect in this system. So basically, so for each surface state, it's a half integer quantum Hall is half integer, so it's half E squared of H. But because transport always measure two surface state, so what we see is H is one. Yeah. So then the quantization is pretty good. It's dissipationless, but we always see two surface state together in transport. But this is DC. But I won't talk about the low energy. Yeah.
So this is DC transport.
DC transport.
And for what thickness of film?
It's like a 10 nanometer.
10
nanometer.
So do the
surface stop surface state, the penetrating depth is like a 1 or 2 nanometer.
I
yeah.
See. And there is no doping in the, like you don't put chromium or something.
No. This is a QTI, then we apply magnetic field. Yeah. Okay, so yeah, I want to focus on topological magnetoelectric effect. So this is original. This is some picture from the original proposal. So the idea is that, so let's say if you have a cylindrical ferromagnet, even if this is almost impossible to realize the experiment, but this is very good to think about the topological magnetic electrode they proposed in the beginning. So assuming this is a cylindrical topological insulator, and then you have a ferromagnet layer like this, so then this basically gap out the surface state. So then if you apply electric field this way, so then you have Hall current like this way along the cylindrical line. So then these current will have an induced magnetization or the magnetic field. So the response between the induced magnetization to the applied electric field is related with the Feinstein constant depends on odd number. It's a similar thing here. So if you apply a magnetic field here, then it will be induced charge polarization along this direction. Then also this response function between the induced polarization and the magnetic field is also an odd number of odd integer times the alpha. But I mean, this is very difficult to realize in experiments. So some theorists just think about other way to probe this effect. So, and one way people realize or people propose that to measure the Faraday rotation or the Kerr effect. So basically, what's Faraday effect is that you have a magnetic field. Let's say if you start with a non-magnetic material, then you apply a magnetic field perpendicular sample. So then you send a linear polarized light here, and in the transmission, so the rotation will change. And this is called Faraday effect. And in the reflected geometry, this is called Kerr effect. So, yeah. So basically, in the quantum Hall regime, you will find that Faraday rotation is quantized in the unit of Feinstein constant. So these equations are for thin film on substrate. So because for thin film on substrate, the light will see the effect from the substrate. So this index n is the index of the substrate. This is not like a lambda level index. So for each surface state, so it's like alpha times the n top plus 1/2. Because we do transmission experiments, so we see two surface state. That's why I wrote like n top plus 1/2 plus n bottom plus 1/2. So in the freestanding films, let's say the Faraday rotation will be just Feinstein constant times the filling factor of the top surface state plus the bottom one. The reason why we have this index is because the experimental geometry, the film is grown on a substrate. Actually, this induced non-universal dependence because, I mean, even though we can measure it very accurately, but this is still some non-universal thing. So yeah, so basically, but the message I want to say that in the quantum Hall limit, in the quantum Hall regime, the Faraday rotation and the Kerr rotation will be quantized in the unit of Feinstein constant times the filling factor of the top and bottom surface. Okay, so yeah, so this is just why it takes us a few years to realize this effect. So basically, it's quite difficult to lower the chemical potential very low. And also, one thing is that people might think you can gate the sample, but gating doesn't really work because the metallic gate will also have the Faraday rotation or Kerr rotation. And also, so the rotation is like on the order of Feinstein constant, so this is like milliradians. It's very small. We need to have a very accurate measurement. Okay. Yeah. So yes. So we tried some way to lower the chemical potential. So you can see like 3 years ago the spectral weight is very high. So now we have very very low spectral weight. It means the chemical potential is very low. So we are we're very close to the Dirac point. Yeah, so the gap is like 20 milliev. We are like 300 milliev away from Dirac point. And also we measure like these generation samples, we will find the sectional resonance. The mass is decreasing. This is because it's a Dirac fermion. So when you lower the chemical potential, the mass is decreasing. This is consistent with the Dirac fermion picture. Okay, so yeah. But I want to show the interesting, because I want to show the rotation part. So still, like in the semi-classical limit, we only observe the long sectional resonance. So I showed you that this. So here I want to show you the imaginary part first. So I showed you that the imaginary part, this dip position, is the sectional frequency. So then on these samples, then we apply field, you will find this sectional frequency shift to higher energy, and also shift much much higher than the spectral range we measure. So then basically. Yeah, basically the theory developed by Stanford people is that so it's an effective theory. What captures is the long wavelength limit. In other words, some low energy behavior. So how we say it's a low energy? So the energy scale here is the lambda level gap or the sectional frequency. So basically, that theory only applies when the frequency is much, much lower than the second frequency. And usually, the second frequency or the lambda level gap is like a tenth milli-EV. That's why we want to use terror to measure the rotation in a very low frequency. So that's our original motivation. Yeah, so yeah, basically what I'm trying to say here, so in the low field, it's just like a semi-classical second resonance, so the second frequency shift to higher frequency. So you can see this inflection point, that's the second frequency shift to higher frequency, then going out of the range we measure. What's left is that this low energy tail, which is kind of flatter, and they overlap with each other at the high field. So yeah, this is low frequency and much, much lower the second frequency. So then if we convert, so basically we can measure the index of the substrate very accurately. I mean, we try our best to measure the index. Then we can convert these kind of plateau value to the total film vector. You will find in this kind of plateau behavior, this is corresponding to the total film vector of 6. So yeah, as I said, because there is some non-universal dependence on substrate, this is not the ideal case. So then what we do is that because we can measure electric field in the time domain, so the first pulse will just pass through the substrate, then pass through the film, and it has a phi rotation. But it can also reflect from this TI film, a substrate interface, then reflect back, and then reflect here again. So then in the second pulse, because there's some time delay, so we can detect this time delay. So this second pulse has phi rotation coefficient. So the traditional way is that you shine a light like this and measure this reflection. But due to some technical reason, this is very difficult. So basically, we use this substrate as a resonator to then measure the co-rotation here. So this is the data at high fields. So yeah, so basically we found that for different samples, this is a phi rotation. So phi rotation is quantized at some value with different filling factor for different samples. And the curl rotation is quantized at the same filling factor. So yeah, so basically curl rotation doesn't tell us more information because they just determine by the, yeah, it basically tells us the same filling factor. But the reason why we measure phi rotation and curl rotation simultaneously is that we want to eliminate the non-universal index. So basically, you can just eliminate the index. Yeah, then we can derive the formula of the Fermi-Schwarz constant just as a quantity, as a measured phi rotation and curl rotation. Yeah, so you want to define a universal experimental quantity to capture the topological phases in experiment. So yeah, so basically, in the end, so the alpha measure is only determined by the phi rotation and co-rotation. Yeah, yes. So then basically we can use the experimental value to plot the measured Fermi-Schwarz constant. We can find it's close to the accelerated value, like 1/137. So there's some variation. That's because an uncertainty in experiment. So if we average like all the samples we measure like 3 or 4 samples, we average them and average the frequency where the rotation is quantized, then we can get a value which is maybe 1% away from the accepted value. So we believe that if the future technique can measure this rotation more accurately, a sample can be better. So this might give a measure of the Fermi-Schwarz constant as a topological invariant in condensed matter system. Maybe this can be even used as some like a gauge, like with this anything determine the unit. Anyway, so this is so far the experiment progress. Yeah, and also this is so like people might say. But in graphene, you can also detect the Fermi-Schwarz constant through the interbody excitation. But in graphene, like many body effect, we all kind of renormalize the Fermi-Schwarz constant. But like in the topological insulator, in the Z2 topological insulator case, so I think maybe interaction may not change the Fermi-Schwarz constant that much. Yeah, so yeah, one thing I forgot to say is that, so in the field, in the field where we observe this quantized rotation, so if you look at the DC resistance, it doesn't really seem there is a plateau there. So this is something puzzled us for a while, which we still don't have a full explanation yet. Why terras see a kind of quantized behavior, but in DC there's no well-developed plateau. So this is let's think about like one surface state. So one surface state is like one quarter of graphene, because in here you have a spin and valley degeneracy. So basically, in magnetic field, it's gap, and you have edge state. So this is one surface state. So then, in two surface state, when you apply magnetic field like this way, the bottom one will also be gapped. But the side surface state feel an in-plane field. So these surface state, these side surface state are not gapped. So in transport, I think these side surface state will gap out the side will gap out these edge state. So what we're thinking that maybe is because so in optics measurement, like the spot is smaller than the sample size, maybe we are less sensitive to this dissipation, these non-chiral size surface state. But I mean, this is just our thought, but there's no final interpretation why we see a plateau quantized behavior in the rotation, but in DC it's not very obvious there. So this is still an open question. Yeah.
What happens if you change the magnetic field direction with respect to the? So right now it's perpendicular to the surface that you're
yeah.
looking at, right? So if you change that angle, then will the curve go away as well?
So yeah, I think. So we didn't do that, but I think basically if you apply magnetic field this way, so let's say, I think the curve effect, so let's say at this field, at the same field, I wouldn't expect the the quantization behavior will be there, because I mean, maybe you will still see a quantization behavior at a much, much higher field. But I don't know what's the effect if you apply basically you have some component along this way. So these will be gapped, I guess. But I'm not sure about. Yeah. I don't know. I guess these quantization behavior will be still there, but it will be at higher field, because basically the perpendicular component on these two surface state are much lower. Yeah, but I guess it will still be there, but it will be at higher field. Yeah.
In DC transport, you might hope to see. I mean, assuming the perpendicular component to all the surfaces is large enough that you can see the
plateau as well. Yeah. So the next question, so we always see two surface state. The next question is, can we measure the half directly? So actually that's an interesting theory by McDonald. So basically their theory is that, so they think that due to some interaction or the fluctuation of the, so they think of this is not, they think these are magnetic doped. Let's say due to some interaction, actually for each surface state, the Hoyt resistance is not exactly half quantized, but the total resistance is still remained. That means one surface state has a conductance like half E square of H plus some delta. Another surface state have half E square of H minus delta. So the total sum is still quantized. This is kind of what we observed, but for each surface state is not observed. But for each surface state, it's not quantized. So this is really something really interesting. Yeah. So in the language of axion electrodynamics is that for true surface state, you have a change of the theta angle like by factor 2 pi. So yeah. So basically, the true surface state together is the real quantized value, but not each. So this is something really interesting. Yeah. So basically. So the future work will be measure the each surface state directly. So we need to measure some really thick sample when the thickness is much longer than the light wavelengths. And also, as you might notice in the recent Condensed Magellan Cloud website, so there is a difference between the topological magnetic electric and the quantum Faraday effect. So the ultimate way to detect the topological magnetoelectric effect is you plan magnetic field, then measure polarization. So the response function actually it's related with the difference between filling factor. While for the far rotation, so you need to have top surface data have e square of 2h bar, and the bottom one have -1 to detect the topological magnetic electric field. But in the real experiment like us, they have the same sign. So basically, far rotation see a sum of the filling factor, but topological magnetic electric effect in the see the difference. So in other words, so in order to detect the topological magnetic electric effect, so first thing you need to break time reversal. Another thing is you need to break inversion globally. And what we do is we just break inversion locally. In other words, if you look at one surface state, it's still a topological magnetic electric effect, or in other words, it's still coming from the E dot B turn, but not globally. So the future work is really you need to measure only one surface state. And also you might measure the interaction-driven non-universal correction to the half integer effect. So some people might say that this kind of quantized behavior might also exist in two-dimensional electron gas or in graphene, because they also have the quantized DC resistance. But in the 2D system or the graphene, you don't have the E dot B origin. So their origin is different. In the topological insulator, these quantized phi rotation is coming from the E dot B turn. That's the magnetoelectric effect. Okay, yeah, to summarize, so we studied the phase transition, topological phase transition in Indian substituted bismuth sunlight system, and we found a very interesting finite side effect which is related with surface hybridization. And this can happen before a real ball gap closure. And also in the semi-classical limit, in some samples in the semi-classical limit, we observe the cyclotron resonance from surface state, and we also observe the signature from some electron phonon coupling. And in the quantum limit, when the chemical energy is very, very low, we observe the quantized phi rotation and curl rotation, which might provide evidence for the topological magnetoelectric effect. And we also show that we can measure the fine strike constant in a solid state as the topological invariant for the first time. And these are the main references. And thanks for your attention.